Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Half the people currently using Northumberland County's emergency shelter are seniors. Christian Harvey, the interim executive director of Transition House at 310 Division Street, said these people are being pushed out of their homes by landlords. They are unable to find affordable places to live. He also said the general public thinks people who experience homelessness do so because it is their own fault. Others see it as a personal moral failing of the individual. He said neither of those things is true. On today's show, you will learn about the current status of Transition House. It is an update following major changes to its mandate back in the fall. Behind the statistics and the changes, you will find surprising insights that could change the way you think about the issues. I am so pleased to have with me today Transition House Interim Executive Director Christian Harvey. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Robert.
I'd like to begin by asking you, how would you describe the state of 310 Division Street currently?
I mean, I'd say the space is running quite well. I mean, we're operating a shelter there for, we're usually 35 individuals, but because of weather, we've expanded our shelter to now be 40 individuals, at least temporarily, plus 10 rooms upstairs or 10 units on the fourth floor that we don't operate, that are run by the county, that are transitional housing. And with all that happening there, the space is running incredibly well.
When you use those numbers, can you put that into context? How many spaces are available in total compared to how many are being used?
So there are 30, in December, we operated with 35 beds available, and on average, 34.6 of those are at capacity at all times. So we rarely ever in December have had an open bed, right? There's a random night here or there where that bed is open. But to give context, we turned people away in December 52 times because we did not have capacity. So there are not wide open beds really at any point. Sometimes at the end of the night when we calculate, we might have a bed because someone left at a time when someone else wasn't able to come. But for the most part, we are always at capacity and often turning people away.
I was surprised that you used a decimal point when you were talking about capacity. Yeah. What does that mean? Could you explain that, please?
Yeah. Well, all I do is I take the average bed numbers per night, each bed number per night, and then I average it across the month. So the average every night is 34.6. Obviously, we've never had 0.6 of a person. All people are full people. But what we see is that on average, and I say 0.6 because I can't say we're at full capacity all the time, but I just want to give it a clear picture that we are virtually at capacity at all times.
And you're saying that there's even a greater demand because you've had to turn away people.
52 times we've turned away people in the month of December.
When I was looking at the key performance indicator dashboard in preparations for our chat today, I noticed that the information there is dated back to September of 2025, when it was said that it was 93.4%. Can you, first of all, tell us why that number hasn't been updated, and then explain to us what has been the trend since September in terms of capacity?
So the key dashboard, we don't have any part of that dashboard, so I'm not really sure how that's updated. And what dashboard is this that you're speaking of? I'm sorry.
The key performance indicator dashboard. It's the county has it, and the reason I'm asking you, and I would understand normally that you might not be involved in that, but it has a note on it that says The stats are updated by Transition House weekly. Oh, and that's why I'm asking you.
So the stats that we give weekly stats to the county. So how it's updated, I do not know. So the stats that I just gave you are from our weekly calculated stats for December. And we have given those for every week since as long as I've been there, which is September. So I can say that we do calculate those stats. I don't know why it's not updated on a regular basis. I'm not sure about that. I couldn't tell you. But I do know that we've calculated the stats. And what we have seen since that time is I keep a pretty strong eye on those. And we do see that there are more and more people that we are turning away every month. We're also seeing that and turning away because of capacity issues, because we just don't have room. And what we are also seeing is that the number of individuals, of unique individuals that we serve, is over 50 every month. So we see over 50 of unique individuals. So that means some people leave, some people come, but we're always seeing over 50. And so I think those numbers are important to watch and to see that we are virtually at capacity all the time.
Is there any possibility that you can expand your capacity? Because I know that there are people in the community that are concerned that there are people that are living rough.
Yeah. So we have just over the last few weeks expanded to 40, to our capacity to 40, so that because of the weather, because we just know there are we're turning so many people away. So that is the maximum that we can do under our current staffing and kind of room space is 40 individuals. To go beyond that, we will have to do some substantial changes in the amount of staffing and possibly some room changes. But at this point, for the foreseeable future, while the weather is like this, we are going to maintain 40 beds.
How do you do that if it's all renovated and all these spaces are put aside? How does that work?
Yeah, and so some of it is making, there were some single rooms that we've made double rooms. It's sort of about spacing that. It's seeing what we can do within fire code. So we were funded to be a 30 by 5 bed shelter, but what we wanted to do is say, okay, with our current staffing model, with the limitations or the safety provisions that have been put on us by fire, is there a way we can expand and make a little bit more room for individuals? And so that's what we did. It's a lot of our shelter manager, Michelle, does some tweaking, and that's sort of how we made it happen.
You mentioned bylaws and obviously and meeting the requirements. When you make these changes, are you always inspected afterward? How does that work?
Yeah, so there's some changes that we would do that for sure. There's others where we already know what we're allowed to operate within, right? So fire puts a limit of an amount of people and a ratio of staff to clients. And so we know what we can operate within there. We don't need an inspection after that because we've already done this. So again, the moving to 40 allowed us to do so without any major change. It was within the capacity of all the things we already operate.
How many people have you moved from the shelter to transitional housing and then from transitional housing to permanent housing?
Yeah, I mean, there are many people who are many. That might be an overstatement. There are people and probably the majority don't go to transitional housing and then permanent housing. Many go straight to permanent housing. Right. And so that step isn't necessarily there. The complicated nature of transitional housing in any community right now is that it's hard to transition to anything. Right. There is so little vacancy available that there's not much to transition to. So transitional housing can sometimes be a misnomer because we don't really, transitional housing works very well in a community where there's permanent housing available. And so you're able to use transitional housing to help someone feel more comfortable in housing, all those sorts of things so that they can be more prepared for permanent housing. That is not where we are in Coburg. Coburg has a 1% vacancy rate, right? And by vacancy rate, I mean of every 100 units, one is available to be rented. That is a very low vacancy rate when we think that what is seen as a healthy one is somewhere between 5 to 8%, right? And so we are a very low vacancy rate. And that doesn't take into account that what is actually vacant That's available to individuals who are, say, on Ontario Works, which is our welfare or social assistance programs, or ODSP, is almost zilch, right? There is, I wanted to be able to speak knowledgeably about this. So I went on Kijiji and Facebook Marketplace to see what's actually available for rent out there. I found one room that was in the that was able to be afforded by someone on Ontario Works, a single room. So that means everyone who is a single person on Ontario Works who is experiencing homelessness or even just looking for a different place in Cobourg, who was fighting for that single room, right? That is a way less than a 1% vacancy rate, right? So our official vacancy rate is 1%. But we could see. So why I go into that whole detail is because housing is very, very hard to achieve right now if you've been left out of the market, especially if you're on social assistance. That being said, we have moved. So each month we have been able to move somewhere between 4 and 5 individuals into either transitional or permanent housing. And sometimes the work is mostly done by the individuals themselves who are looking for it. Other individuals through our support of our case management team. And so it's a combination, other supports they might have. So we are constantly able to move some individuals, but that is working against an almost impossible situation.
You mentioned that you have caseworkers and you provide additional services. How many people who use the shelter have taken advantage of mental health services and addiction services?
Well, important to say that not everyone who accesses the shelter needs either mental health or addiction supports, right? So I always want to name that mental health and addiction is present in the homeless community as it is in all our communities. Right. But it is not 100% by any means. Right. We are seeing more and more individuals who are in our shelter just because of affordability. And many of them are seniors. Right. And so it is not a mental health or addictions issue. That being said, we do often see individuals are able to connect individuals to mental health supports and to addiction supports. Another thing that I think is important, though, to name within our community, and this is within Ontario, I don't just mean Cobourg in general, is we talk a lot about the need for treatment. And especially in conversations, say, on forced treatment or those sorts of things, right? Those conversations that the answer to homelessness will be we need to force people into treatment programs. The reality is there's not enough treatment programs for those who want it, right? There isn't. There is lineups. If you want to get access treatment, you're often waiting. Now, sometimes you're able to get through, but treatment is not something that's just available whenever you want it. And I think that's an important thing to name.
You mentioned in your comments that you're getting a lot of seniors. Yeah. How many seniors are you seeing, and can you help us understand what's going on there?
Well, we see, I'd say right now about half our residents are seniors. And why that's happening, why I'm hearing, is often you can be renting for a long period of time in an affordable unit that you're living on a kind of low income, but because your rent has been low, then you're able to afford that. Then all of a sudden, maybe the landlord wants to rent to somebody else, or does some what they call rent evictions, right? Where they, in order to do a renovation, they evict someone. Those sorts of things happen quite regularly because then you can get more rent for something. And so what we see is people losing their housing, and then they're no longer able to compete on the housing market. And so they find themselves in the space of living in shelter.
Half the people are living are seniors.
Yeah.
I think people would find that very surprising.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear this as part of our conversations day to day?
This is the thing, is that we, I find this really important to push on, is that we have, and the general public has an idea that people are experiencing homelessness because of their own fault, because of their own moral failings, right? That is typically how we picture it. And so we automatically have a picture of someone who's experiencing homelessness as someone who has morally failed, and we need to help them make better choices. And that's the answer to homelessness. We have evidence after evidence after evidence that that is not why we see our homelessness crisis. Our homelessness crisis is the reality that our rents are too high and we don't have enough units available. That is why we have a homelessness crisis. And there is no amount of helping people make better choices that will fix that problem, right? We can't, that is, and so we pass bylaws and laws that are focused on punishing individuals who are experiencing homelessness with the idea that if we make it more uncomfortable for them to be homeless, they'll be motivated to be housed, when housing is, when that is not the issue.
I'd like to move on. Mm-hmm. What is the status of the shelter license renewal process? I understand you're currently going under that.
Yeah, so the ECE bylaw, and that we are, Coburg is the only community that has this process where they license shelter providers or emergency care establishments. And that process, we're through it. We currently have our license. That process is quite extensive and also means that if you are in violation of a bylaw in anything that's not even connected to the shelter itself, then you could risk losing your license. It's also an expensive process in that the requirements that you have, whether it be security or those sorts of things, are quite pricey. And so it makes so that operating anything like a shelter becomes way more costly.
Is there a renewal going on?
We received our renewed license in last month. So we are renewed for a year. So we have our license for a year. I mean, there's always risk because there seems to be, because it is such a catch-all of if you're in violation of anything, you're in violation of this license. But I am not particularly worried at this point. I think it is, though, a limiting factor. And I think it is a problematic thing. It worries me that other communities might adopt it because it'll make it makes operating shelter much more complicated.
Previously, the town bylaw enforcement officer held a number of inspections, and some of them were unscheduled. Mm-hmm. Since you have arrived, how many inspections has taken place?
There has been one inspection.
Was it scheduled?
No.
What was the reason for it? Were you given a reason?
No. My guess is that it was around the renewal of the license itself. Because it was just before that we received the license, or just after we received the license. So my guess is around the renewal.
Have there been any other types of inspections taking place, like fire or building, anything else?
No, mostly bylaw. And that being said, I mean, we've invited fire definitely to come. We have scheduled ones around that. But the bylaw one was the one that was unscheduled.
Just before you came in, the mandate for Transition House changed, going from mm-hmm. a low barrier to a higher barrier shelter model, restricting mm-hmm. access for some individuals with higher needs. Mm-hmm. Can you describe the impact that that has had on the services you offer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I think is important to remember is that we are often... When we put, often decisions are being made on how to operate a shelter by counselors who have a lot of knowledge, but not on how to operate shelters, right? And so I think it can be a little bit worrisome when decisions are made on operational levels by individuals who haven't run shelters before. And so what we saw is a mandate that was made around making our shelter a higher barrier. That is problematic because people who are higher acuity, as they say, or people with more complications have just as much a right to shelter as anyone else does, right? Everyone needs to have a roof over their heads. And so it is difficult to put a mandate to become higher acuity when we don't have an alternative elsewhere. I mean, you could say maybe the warming room during the winter months, but as has been said a lot of the time, that's caused some issues, right? For time, people haven't been able to sleep there, right? And so those sorts of things become really difficult when we make it almost illegal for some people to exist, right? When you can't actually sleep because you are someone with high acuity anywhere, your acuity will only increase, right? You will only become more high acuity. And so we need to be, instead of asking how do we leave more people out, we need to be looking at how do we make sure more people are protected, right? And so we have done our best. We operate within the mandate that we've been given, and we are doing that. But I think we have to name that it is at the expense of people.
Has there been any impact on staffing or programming that has taken place as part of this new mandate?
Well, what has it meant? So there's a few things that have changed. One is that we are meant to have, when someone presents at the door, if someone appears inebriated or under the influence of substances, that we're not to let them in. Now, I think that's important that there are many things symptoms that are the same. So someone with a head injury could appear to be under the influence of a substance. Someone who has had lack of sleep could appear under the influence. So we're very careful with this one because it's important. We do not want to be discriminating anyone based on something like a head injury or anything like that. So for us, it's much more, is this person a potential danger to anyone within the shelter itself? That tends to be more our, are they presenting in a way that is a danger to others, right? Because we do not want to be involved in any human rights violations of denying someone access due to various things because maybe we perceive that it's substance related. So that's an important piece. Secondly, we have had to remove our amnesty lockers, and I not remove the lockers, but remove the amnesty aspect of the amnesty lockers. So that is and by amnesty lockers, they are lockers where we don't. People can put what they want in those lockers. They can't bring any, it's stuff they wouldn't be allowed into their rooms, but they could put into their lockers before accessing the rest of the shelter. And so that allows for individuals, it allows for any number of things. We're no longer allowed to offer amnesty lockers. And so we've had to change our storage lockers so that illegal substances are no longer allowed to be, anything illegal are not allowed to be in those lockers. I'm sure people have very strong opinions about that, but the reality is that we make it much harder by doing that for some individuals who struggle with addictions to access our services. And then the with staffing, there hasn't been a large impact. Our staff are great, and and they've been able to continue supporting in a great way.
In the past, security and the relationship between Transition House and its adjacent community has been an issue. Mm-hmm. How is it going now since you've been there? Has it improved? Is it the same?
I mean, I don't want to say that it's because of me that it's going well, but it does seem to be going well. I think from what I understand, the reason why there was tension was the operation of the warming and cooling hub that existed within the first floor that was removed in July. That had a major impact on many individuals. It's one of the reasons why we're struggling with a warming room right now, right? And so because that the bottom floor was purpose built for to have access for those with higher acuities to be able to access the shelter. That is no longer the case. And so things are going a lot quieter. And I'd say the relationship is better. I do want to name, though, that's not necessarily good news for those who are experiencing homelessness, because it's meant that they have nowhere to go, right? And I think that what it has done is spreads out the issue throughout the community, because people don't just disappear. They still have to exist somewhere. And so we have individuals who, when the warming room closes at night, have nowhere to go for the whole day until the warming room opens again in the evening, right? We have a lot of individuals who are having to huddle just outside for the full day. That's important. But I will say it has, it has our relationship with our neighbors has gotten better. I think one of the things that, again, is sometimes forgotten is that we aren't going to, that when we have more people living in desperate situations, it affects us all, right? And so when we have individuals who have nowhere to go, who have to exist outside, it will have an impact on those who are housed. And when we offer supports and services to anywhere, that's where people are going to go because they desperately need it. We're not going to address the homelessness crisis and then in extension, the issues, the ways in which that's affecting our neighborhoods by criminalizing those who are experiencing homelessness. That's not going to work, right? What we need to do is create more housing. That is the only way we're going to address this. So we can try and say, again, we've addressed the neighborhood feels better around 310. But let's not pretend that that's in any way addressed homelessness. It's now spread it so that those who are experiencing it are in a worse off spot.
Speaking of security, in November, police undertook two raids and charged some people with drug trafficking. Mm-hmm. One of the locations was a unit inside 310 Division Street.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of follow-up that took place after this incident?
So I have to say that what that happened on the fourth floor in one of the housing units that we don't operate. So it is not something that that Transition House itself has anything to do with. That is a housing unit like any other. I don't know any details to what happened because, again, it's not our clients, it's not our program, any of those things. But I do think it's important that everyone deserves housing. And so just because we see that someone who is in that housing has been charged of something that is not good, you know, drug trafficking is not a good thing. Everyone still deserves housing. And so we are going to find individuals who do bad things who are housed all throughout our community. And that happened at 310. Again, I can't speak to the current situation because it was not part of our programming. But I do always want to name that if that could be used as an argument of why, I don't know, transitional housing is not a good thing to operate, instead of saying we need to house everyone.
Why didn't Transition House release information that distanced yourself from this incident? I mean, you just said something that you guys aren't associated with that. And obviously, if the county's running it, then they would be ultimately the ones that would have to be accountable if there is any accounting to be done. But mm-hmm. Transition House was completely silent. And yet, throughout the community, 310 was being associated with this. And there was questions amongst politicians and within social media and people on the street talking about it. We're all saying, you know, what happened at Transition House? I'm just curious why there was such silence when there obviously people were misunderstanding who was responsible and why.
Well, we did respond to, so Rebel News reported on it and we responded, and the article was all about how bad Transition House was. And then at the end did say, and Transition House has said this is not their program. My experience has been that people are looking for reasons to any program that is working with people experiencing homelessness. People are looking for reasons to write it off, and there is substance use in a population who experience homelessness.
But with all due respect, though, they contacted you. You didn't contact them. There was no press release. There was nothing on your social media. There was nothing on your website that even addressed this fundamental difference between the fact that this was the county's housing, wasn't yours. So why was that?
Because I don't think the county did anything wrong.
But what about you and the perception within the community? Why didn't you guys come out and say, this isn't our thing?
Yeah, well, you're right. We didn't do a press release. We did respond to many people who asked. And I did say that. It was in Northumberland Today as well that was said. So it was said in multiple places. But no, I didn't do a press release because of the way I believe this was going to be used. It was again around trying to see associate homelessness and drug use and criminalize people experiencing homelessness. And I wasn't, I what by distancing ourselves from that, I felt like it was us saying that we are that we're okay with the way in which the whole system is being typecast. And I don't want to be a part of that, right? Because I think that is an unhealthy way to address this issue. I want to get to the heart of dealing with homelessness. And I don't think that us distancing ourselves from the county in that moment was the way in which to do that.
Out of all of this has come an initiative from Coburg's mayor to undertake a major review of the county's social service systems. If that goes forward, what does that mean for Transition House?
Well, I mean, I really don't know. What reviews are interesting? What are they trying to find in this review? I don't know, right? Are they trying to find cost savings? That's one way in which you review. Are you trying to find like best practice? Because I can say right now, there's many ways in which our current system is not using best practice, but that's because it is being mandated by the county, that's not taken by a county council and various politicians to not use best practice, right? So not using harm reduction is not best practice. You won't find anyone who argues that best practice is to avoid harm reduction, but that's what we're being mandated to do. And so we can, best practice is not being taken into account. And so I don't know what a review is meant to do. I think it's important to say, what is the review looking to find, right? Reviews are not objective fact-finding missions. They are often with a purpose. And so what is it that they are trying to discover? What's the problem that they're looking to address? I don't know what that is.
You appreciate when you say and talk about harm reduction, that you say that it's best practice, but there are lots of people out there that will argue the opposite. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I would want to know what they mean by harm reduction and what they're saying. And I can say what I mean by it is we have many people who are at risk of death, and I want to do whatever we can to protect them from dying. And that's what I mean by harm reduction. And so that can take a lot of different elements. I don't think people are actually against harm reduction, but I would want to know what they are against, what pieces of it they mean by that. But yeah, there are people who don't think it's best practice. I think they won't find a lot of evidence to support them. But there are many, many beliefs on that.
What is the status of the liaison committee? What are they working on these days?
Yeah, so we meet monthly. And in that meeting, we discuss how do we communicate with the community to bridge greater conversation on what is happening in our community, right? How do we begin to have individuals, like I mentioned earlier, how do we begin to move from blaming people who are experiencing homelessness for their homelessness to begin to have a greater understanding of why this is happening? Because if we can grow in our empathy and compassion, then I think we can begin to address the issue in much better ways. And that's a key of one of the things that we're talking about in the community and the committee right now.
What is the fiscal picture for Transition House currently?
Our major funder, our only funder at this point, well, that's not true. Our major funder is the county. And so we are funded to operate the shelter, and that is our major source of funding. We do receive funding from the United Way to, we're starting a program to train people in culinary skills. And so we are soon going to be hiring a chef who will be cooking meals for those accessing the shelter while also offering training to anyone who is accessing it who would like it to learn skills to be able to get jobs in employment. And that's something that United Way has helped fund and that we're hoping, as well as Reaching Home program, federal program. But largely we are funded by the county, who has been, county staff have been incredibly supportive.
Were you part of the 2026 budget deliberations?
No, I was not.
Are there any shortfalls in the budget?
I'll have to be honest. I can't speak too well to the county budget. I don't know enough about that.
For Transition House, my
apologies. Oh, for Transition House. Yeah. So I will say our budget right now, to operate the shelter as we currently operate, we have the funding to be able to do that. Our goal, though, is to expand into things such as housing. Like, we want to house people, right? That is the answer to where we are right now, is we need housing, and we need housing that is not market housing. We need housing run by nonprofits, run by government, that is taken out of the market. We need more of that. And so we would like to get into that, and that will require us fundraising. But I'm excited for the possibilities there. Programs, doing more programs like the culinary training program, that will require funding outside of what we currently receive from the county, because the county obviously funds us for one particular project, but I think we can do so much more from that place.
Do I understand that you have the funding to do the thing with the chef, or is that?
Yes, we have that to grow into other things. We would look for funding. Yeah.
Do you feel at all that there's any threat to Transition House continuing to offer the services or to run the shelter?
I think there always is. I've been in this work for a long time, and what I see is when people begin to get scared of what they see happening in the community, that often those services that are supporting individuals are targeted with all kinds of different things. And so there's always that risk, right? Now, if we are doing things that deserve critique, I want to hear them, right? But I think there also is always the risk of organizations who are doing the work of supporting individuals experiencing homelessness. You know, the stigma that is put towards people experiencing homelessness often extends to the organizations that look to support. And that can happen. But I think we need to operate as an organization boldly and courageously and not worry too much about whether that's going to happen. Funders make decisions that funders are going to make. And so I've really appreciated working with the county staff. I think they're an incredible group of people. I've really enjoyed getting to know other organizations in town and getting to know our own staff and looking at ways we can operate in a way that better supports our clients. And I think we're getting there. I think we at Transition House are doing a really great job, and we can do a better one. And I want to continue to go in that direction.
You are the interim executive director. When you arrived, this sounded like a temporary job for 6 months. You've been here 5 months. Do you plan to stay on?
My contract has been extended till September. So I started in September of 2025 and has been extended to 2026.
What are your predictions for Transition House in 2026?
That's a good question, Robert. I think that Transition House will continue to be transformed by the residents who stay there. And what I mean by that is we've started something called the Resident Advisory Committee, which means every week the residents themselves get together with myself and they give feedback on how we currently operate. They give suggestions on how we might operate better. And I have loved how that group has already transformed our organization. And my prediction, and this is exciting and scary all at the same time, is that they will continue to transform us in ways that will only make us better.
Does 310 Division or Transition House have any relationship to the Warming Room?
We don't currently, no.
Christian Harvey, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Christian Harvey, Interim Executive Director for Transition House. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me. And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.